Hello and welcome to An Incomplete History.
I'm Hillary.
And I'm Jeff.
We're your hosts for this weekly history podcast.
So, Hillary, good afternoon. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Sunny California. It's back to kind of normal weather. It's a little warm out here. It's the beginning of October as we're recording this. How about Mississippi?
It is just as hot as it was in August. I have seen no reprieve, sweaty all the time, constant heat. I don't know when it's going to be fall.
Well, you're in northern Mississippi though, right?
Yeah. And I guess they keep saying it's a heat wave, but I mean, it's just been this hot ever since I moved here in August. So.
Ugh. Well, I mean, we miss you in Southern California, so... Where the weather's perfect, or we don't have weather. I guess that's what some people say. We don't have weather here.
Yeah, you don't know when the seasons change. That's kind of sad.
It's when Costco starts selling sweaters. You know, it's fall. Ski gear means winter's just around the corner. Stuff like that. I mean, we've talked about doing this podcast for a while, and we finally decided to start doing it. So let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, why a podcast? What drew you to doing a podcast?
I mean, I listen to podcasts every morning. I go out and go for like a run or a walk, and that's just kind of how I start my day. And a lot of times when I'm lecturing or, you know, going to be lecturing on a certain topic, I'll seek out a podcast that talks about it. And I've had several that I listen to and that I access, you know, for the enjoyment of listening, but then also I just really like to learn when I'm out in the morning. And so I'm like, you know, we could do something like this. We could contribute to this genre and talk about history and kind of bring history from the normal, you know, from the ivory tower, so to speak, into just a podcast, and people can just listen to it and access the way that we talk about history, the kind of things that we deal with, the topics that we'll discuss in class. And it just allows us, you know, an extra realm to discuss our field.
So it's like an extension of the classroom for you in some ways.
Yeah, in some ways, I think it's an extension of the classroom. In other ways, it's kind of delving a little bit deeper into the classroom. I mean, maybe students will listen to this at some point. I don't know. But it's just a way to allow the conversation to continue, I guess, because there's so many things to talk about, history speaking, and 50 minutes just doesn't really cover it in class. And I like this opportunity to be able to have a broader audience, I guess. What about you? What makes you want to do it?
Well, I mean, you know, I've been into digital history for a while. It's kind of in a lot of the courses that I teach, we do a digital aspect and kind of a public aspect as well. And I think the best podcasts out there, at least for history podcasts right now, really do kind of do exactly what you said, which is kind of bridge academia with the public, maybe present things to our students in a more accessible way, but also doesn't really divide the public from our students, right? I mean, our students are the public and the public are our students. And, you know, I've listened to a lot of really great history podcasts out there. There are a lot of really great ones. The flip side of that are there are some not really great ones, right? There's some that I just think are just extensions of kind of academic discussions and don't really seek to broaden like who's talking and what are we talking about. And for me, in my teaching, a lot of times, a lot of what I do is about demystifying the process of being an historian. And I think a podcast like this can really go a long way towards that, kind of bridging that gap between what the public perceives as what historians do versus what we actually do.
Right.
Plus, I think it's a great opportunity for you and I to get together and talk. We love to talk and get other people in. That we really want to talk to, ask them questions. And I think it's, you know, hopefully, very least, I think I'm going to learn a lot. Hopefully listeners learn a little bit. We'll see though.
Well, what I think is neat about it really is we talk almost every day and we call each other and we'll talk about current events. We'll talk about our classes. We'll talk about something that we've read or something that we're working on. And our conversation as historians, it's an ongoing thing. And so to be able to kind of boil that into a podcast episode and hopefully extend the conversation to some of our other colleagues and maybe people who are just interested in history, I think that that's kind of a cool, fun opportunity that if we look at it in that way, because we have a good rapport, and if we can just extend our conversations to be a little more useful rather than just us chatting with one another, this is kind of a neat opportunity to do that also.
Yeah, I think it is. In that vein, I think it might be good for our listeners to learn a little bit about us. So I'd like to introduce Hillary, Hillary Colson. She's a visiting professor, assistant professor of history and gender studies at the University of Mississippi. She's originally from San Diego, and she earned her PhD at the University of California, San Diego in 2016. She's taught undergraduate history courses as a lecturer since 2014 and has taught a wide range of courses that play to her interdisciplinary strengths as a researcher. Hillary studies the history of institutions in the antebellum South with a particular focus on gender or race within early prisons and universities. Her work on incarcerated motherhood appears in an edited volume on Women in Prison, Incarcerated Women, A History of Struggles, Oppression, and Resistance in American Prisons. Her more recent work on media representations of women convicted of murder in the 19th century can be found in Pennsylvania History, a journal of Mid-Atlantic Studies. Hillary is happily working on her first book project that examines Virginia's early penitentiary system and how it intertwined with the deeply rooted system of slavery in the antebellum period. Her research is focused, but she has a lot of fun delving into topics unrelated to her own work. That's why she's excited to work on this podcast. She loves to talk about all things history and finds teaching outside her specific field of study is the most rewarding because it affords the opportunity to continue to become, continue being intellectually curious. Because she values interdisciplinary work and was trained in the humanities, she strives to include a broad humanities approach to research as well as teaching. So when you're not working, you love to be outside, right?
Yeah, that's my favorite thing. I start every morning with a hike out in the woods, wherever I live, that's my favorite thing to do.
So she hikes with her two rescue dogs every day. And even though she lives in the Mississippi heat, she likes to look for coffee shops with outdoor seating. She has two ragdoll cats that are too inept to join for an outdoor adventure, but they get plenty of attention inside when it's time to wind down for the day and watch Netflix. So Jenny, Dobby, Butters, and Mittens.
That's the brood. I somehow ended up with four animals.
Fur babies. Yes. Excellent.
Yeah.
Well,
so I've known Jeff for several years. We met in graduate school, and I'd like to introduce him to our listeners. Jeffrey recently completed his PhD at the University of California, San Diego in history. He considers himself an intellectual historian. He specializes in late 19th century imperial ideology in the United States and its connection with citizenship and military service. He connects these ideas with similar trends in the imperial histories of Britain, France, and Germany. He also incorporates recent developments in the history of violence, as well as gender and class, into his work. Right now, he's working on turning his dissertation, which was titled Tallgrass Empire, Aspirational Citizenship, Martial Service, and the Creation of Subjects in the Northern Great Plains, 1876 to 1898, into a monograph. Right now, Jeffrey is a lecturer in the humanities. He teaches at both San Diego State University and the University of California, San Diego. He's taught classes on classical Athenian philosophy, digital approaches to the humanities, global history, as well as some more esoteric topics like the history of torture and a multidisciplinary course on the problem of evil. All of his courses have strong digital components, and he hopes his involvement in this podcast will contribute not only to the new digital history, but an increased focus on engaging with the public on historical questions. Jeff lives with his partner Rick and rescue dog Harvey in San Diego. He enjoys all reading and travel, as well as the city's largest annual event, Comic-Con. He's there every year. He's something of a nerd. He loves spending time with his friends, playing board games. He'll enjoy a craft beer every now and again. He loves wheat beers and the recently re-released version of Avalon Hill's classic Dune. Yep, he's a dork. When he's not at a local game store or brew pub, you can find him at Disneyland, which is just up the freeway from his house. And that is indeed true. He is at Disneyland often.
All the time.
Yeah. Magical.
Yes, it's truly magical. So that's a little bit about us, but let's get back to the kind of the thing of what this podcast is going to be and you know, what we hope to do with it. I know when I approached you with a prospective title and I said, I want to do an incomplete history. And we kind of had a good discussion about that. So, I mean, what were your misgivings about that title? Because you definitely had some misgivings. I had to win you over.
He did have to win me over. My initial reaction to it was, if we're saying an incomplete history and we're trying to bring guests on to discuss their work or, you know, to talk about, you know, a book that they've recently written or something they're contributing, I don't want to ever give somebody the sense that we think that they haven't done a good job, right? That they haven't, you know, completely studied the topic or well enough, and that somehow our, you know, little podcast is going to fix that. And so I expressed that concern to you, right? But you had a good response, and so now I'm sold, and here we are. But what's your take on that?
So I think one thing, I kind of the intellectual process of becoming an historian, I think, is there's a time kind of early in your study of history where you think you're kind of get to this final answer, and that maybe drives you for a while. It's like I can crack the question of humanity and the human condition and all this stuff eventually. And I think part of the maturation process studying history is you kind of start to get to the idea that, well, first of all, that might be an unreasonable goal. And second, we can always contribute more to something we've kind of looked at. And I think, remembering back to my first year in grad school, a lot of people kind of have a crisis of confidence when they start a PhD program because they think there's nothing left to do. They're like, well, all the good stuff's been done. There's nothing I can add. And I think one thing you start to learn as you kind of delve deep into history is there's always stuff to add to a conversation about a specific topic. And it's not just based on kind of new sources being discovered, a new letter comes to light, a new journal appears. A lot of times it's just we imagine the world in a different way and kind of our thoughts about things start to change and you know, maybe we're not focusing as much on one aspect of history now as we used to, and we're focusing on something else. So there's always something to add to the conversation. And I think that's why it's an incomplete history. And it's definitely a play on those little books, The Complete History of So-and-So, where they kind of act like, well, here's all there is to say about the Roman Empire.
Right. There's never enough to say about the Roman Empire.
Right. There's never enough to say about the Roman Empire. And I think that that's a good pushback against popular perception about maybe what historians do is this idea that, well, just tell me what I need to know. And it's like, well, that's contingent on now and what we're talking about and what our questions are. So I think that your kind of issues with, you know, I don't want somebody to come on the show and like feel, oh, they're denigrating kind of my work and saying it's not finished. It's the whole thing is every work that gets created kind of contributes to that conversation. It kind of drives us forward and opens up new questions. And I think that's another reason it's an incomplete history. Every new kind of bit of information we have or new perspective we have opens up a whole array of new questions we have to answer.
Yeah, I like that perspective. And I especially like it in terms of what we do on a day-to-day basis. We're always learning and growing, and our work is always evolving. And when I think back to all the stuff, you know, that's gotten me to the point where I am now and the work that I'm doing now, I'll look at old drafts of things and go, oh, that was so terrible. And I think that academics often do that. They'll look back at work that they did in the past and, you know, be upset by it or something. But I guess the point of it is nothing's ever truly complete. I mean, you may get to the point of writing a book and that's great, but there's always going to be something that can be added to it. There's always going to be another part of the conversation that can be had. And there's always going to be commentary, right? And that's kind of, I think, what our podcast offers. It's like, we talked briefly, you know, about the topics that we want to cover and everything month to month. And it allows for the continuing conversation. So if we read a book and we like it and we want to have somebody on who wrote the book, it allows us to continue the conversation. And it'll always be incomplete. Even when the podcast is over and the book is finished being read, it's still, you know, I think that the term, I've come to terms with the term incomplete. And I think what it means is that there should be an ongoing conversation.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, well put. It's interesting because I pitched it for you. And as I kind of pulled you to my side, you started to see things even I didn't notice there before. And I think it's an intellectually honest approach, which I think you and I are both really into that, right? This whole idea of intellectual honesty, intellectual humility. Neither of us have all the answers. I mean, nobody has all the answers. No matter how much of a superstar somebody might be academically, they don't have all the answers. And I think that that really goes a long way to demystifying history. So you mentioned something, and I want to kind of talk about this briefly. You mentioned about kind of what we want to do. What does this first year look like? What do we kind of broadly want to cover? And we've talked a lot about different things we want to do. And without spilling the beans on too much, I would just like to ask you, I mean, what's the one thing that we've talked about we're going to be doing that you're kind of really looking forward to? Something that you can't wait for us to get to. You're kind of chomping at the bit to get to it.
Well, we talked about discussing current events and how they relate to a historical context. And I'm really excited to do that. I think, and not in a controversial way, really, and not in a politically motivated way, but just in an analytical sense of how is this current moment that we're living in, how is it rooted historically? What can we see in, you know, the early Republic era of the founding of this nation that kind of reflects what's happening currently? And how can we make sense of the things that are going on in this country, politically, culturally, socially? How do we make sense of that as historians? And, you know, how do we, you know, live on a day-to-day basis in the political climate that we're in? But what are the historical understandings we can gain from that? And that part of it really, really excites me.
Right. I mean, it's a healthy dose of context, right?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of times that's what I think people need, is they need a healthy dose of context. You know, that's one thing is it's, you know, I know you and I both have, you know, strong political opinions on things, but one of the things I think both of us try to do in our work when we teach and research and everything is try to kind of leave those political leanings at the door and be honest about what we're trying to do with ourselves too, right? Mm-hmm. Recognize maybe when politics intrudes, always kind of work to not have it in there. I know a lot of people disagree with that. They say, you know, bring your politics with you. Let it influence what you research. Let it influence the argument you're making and everything. And, you know, I'm not putting them down for doing that. Everybody has to kind of do this their own way. For me, I feel I can reach many more students when I don't have kind of a political agenda to what I'm teaching.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I make it my goal, and this is going to sound bad, I'll explain myself, but to kind of confuse my students about my political leanings, because I enjoy playing devil's advocate, you know, to use the phrase, but I enjoy presenting both sides of something because I think it's important to be able to show students that you can provide analytical narrative, you can have persuasive arguments on both sides of things. And oftentimes, you know, because we're teaching history, I don't get into current events that much, but I can present both sides of things. And I think I leave students guessing oftentimes. And I think what it does too is it provides a comfort to the students to not feel like they're being judged on their political views or their political viewpoints. And I've had students, both liberal, conservative, and anywhere in between, approach me and talk to me about their politics and feel comfortable doing it because I don't let them know where I stand. And I think I learned that from my uncle. And I'll tell a real brief story here is when I was in high school, I took a geography class from my mom's uncle. So he's my great uncle. And I just happened to be in his geography class. And I never knew his politics. And I would ask my mom, "Mom, what's Uncle Richard? Is he a Republican or a Democrat?" And she would never tell me. And years later, as an adult, I would go to his house for dinner or something. And oh my gosh, he's like a really, really hardcore Democrat. And I always told him, I said, "I respected you so much because it never came into the classroom." And while I respect other people's decisions to bring their politics to the class, I think that that's a fine approach. For me, I found value in having the freedom and ability to think for myself without the pressure of thinking I needed to impress my instructor with my political leanings. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I completely agree. I play the game with my students too. It drives them crazy sometimes because they're like, what do you think? And I'm really evasive about how I feel about things unless it's related to the course. Right. So they'll ask about something like impeachment and they really want an opinion. And I said, "I'm not going to give you opinion. I can give you context. I can tell you what the Constitution does and doesn't say. I can talk to you about the previous times impeachment proceedings have started." And it frustrates them, but I also think on some level they appreciate it because a lot of times I think they feel we're looking for an answer that confirms what we want them to say. For me, I want my students to become kind of independent thinkers who can rationally analyze evidence, construct an argument based on that evidence, and come up with something. And I don't have to agree with that argument all the time, as long as it's kind of well-reasoned and is based on evidence. More power to them.
Yeah, it's our job to give them the tools to make good arguments. And it's not our job to impart, in my opinion, it's not our job to impart our viewpoints in order to make them regurgitate it. And, I remember having a few classes in college and beyond where I felt like, oh my gosh, I have to get this right or else X professor's going to hate me or going to grade me down because I just know their political viewpoints. And so I can't really express my own ideas. I have to regurgitate theirs. And that does not impart critical thinking skills. It really doesn't. And so that's just kind of my stance. And I think that that's why you and I have always gotten on so well is because we're willing to kind of tread in that uncomfortable territory of letting students truly think for themselves and concoct their own evidence and ideas. And a lot of times it doesn't align with what I think or believe, but as long as it's evidence-based, like you said, that's what I'm looking for. That's what we're looking for as educators.
Yeah. I think well put. I know we're going to have kind of a segment, a recurring segment throughout the year. We're talking about kind of the future of education. The idea is, what is education going to look like? Higher education, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now. So I want you to be kind of the first test subject about this question. So, 10 years from now, what do you see as the number one challenge for higher education? Kind of looking at your crystal ball, 10 years from now, number one issue for higher ed?
Well, I think the challenge is...
I know I'm totally putting you on the spot.
You are.
She had no idea what
I
was going to ask.
I think that one of them is in terms of labor of faculty. And I'm not saying that just because I am faculty now. because I, of course, care very much about the students and student access and, you know, making sure that there's access for students and all of this. And I think online education has opened a lot of doors in that realm. And certainly we can have a whole discussion about this. But I think one of the most pressing issues, honestly, is the labor of faculty and how that is being exploited, I think, at this point. We're seeing, particularly in history departments, the shrinking of tenure lines and job security, and we're seeing people being paid just tiny sums to work. And I'm really troubled by the faculty labor market. And that, again, it trickles down to the students, right? Of course, I'm most concerned about students and their experience and access and ability, but their experience is always going to be impacted by the faculty, by the quality of faculty. And so to me, I think that that's going to be the biggest thing.
So it's, so what you're pointing to is kind of the tenure versus adjunct mentality, kind of, as yeah. universities kind of increasingly turn to adjunct faculty to kind of allow them to grow and shrink classes as necessary. I mean, as early career PhDs, I mean, we're both very anxious about that, right? I mean, it's because I know our advisors and faculty we worked under as we finished our degrees, they kind of matured in an era when there was tenure, and adjunct, being an adjunct was kind of not a very common thing.
When it's looked really down upon.
Right. I still think it's looked down upon, and that's a whole other conversation we can have. But I think it's become the norm. I mean, when I'm teaching at either of the places I teach, I see many more people who are adjunct than are faculty. And I think I agree. This whole thing of the labor of academics kind of being devalued, teachers particularly, it might be representative of broader societal kind of devaluing of educators. But I think in college, I won't ever forget this. A few years ago, a student came to me. I was teaching a class, and he was kind of vaguely interested in going to graduate school and becoming a professor or something. And he asked me, he said, "It's a pretty cushy job, right?" And I was like, "Well, what do you mean?" And he's like, "You only have to teach like 2-3 hours a week and then you're done." And I told him, I said, "Okay, sunshine. Let's go have a coffee and talk about this. And let me kind of take you through what an average week looks like." Yeah. And I think a lot of people don't realize how much preparation goes into kind of teaching outside the classroom. And you've got classroom instruction time and you've got office hour times, and those kind of hardwired times. But then you've got so many other times. I mean, many times it's 11 p.m. at night on a Saturday, and you know, after Rick goes to bed or something, I'm at my computer writing a lecture.
Oh, yeah. And that's just the teaching aspect, right?
And that's
such a small portion of what we do as historians. So that's just a small portion of what we do really on a day-to-day basis is the teaching. And I, you know, to be honest, that's what I get the most joy out of, because I'm a social person and sitting and researching and writing is good, but I really do crave social interaction. So I do like the teaching, but it's a really small part of what I do and part of what we all do on a week to week basis, and finding time beyond the grading and the writing lectures and all of that. I mean, we're working on books, we're working on articles, we're applying to permanent positions, we're, you know, trying to create a semblance of normalcy in our personal lives, right? I mean, I work 7 days a week, and I would say you probably do too. I mean, there's just no days off.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's like the big issue, is a lot of people don't see. So do you think it's going to get worse in 10 years? Or do you think it's going to kind of resolve itself somehow over the next 10 years?
I think that the demand has gone up for education. And I think that, you know, they're going to continue to hire people for low wages to teach classes and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, generally, at the end of the day, nothing's going to change. I mean, there's a teacher in front of the classroom with a whiteboard and a podium, and there's students sitting in seats looking at the teacher, right? I mean, it's been that way for hundreds of years. And arguably, online education disrupts that model slightly, but not totally. And I don't think that there's going to be massive or large scale changes. I think though that people won't, the best quality people aren't going to seek the profession, because I do worry about the living wage and I do worry about student loan debt. I mean, that's a whole other conversation too, but I mean, it's difficult to talk people into, hey, you go to school until you're 30 and pay, you know, to go through school. I mean, even if you do have stipends and such, I mean, you're still supplementing your income, right? It's difficult to talk people into that, I think. And I think some of the most quality people might shy away from it. It's like, well, you know, I don't want to do that to be an adjunct. So I do worry about the quality and such going forward, and whether or not people are actually going to want to seek the profession anymore. But I'm not the right person to be talking to about this, to be honest. That's not.
Well, you're sure you
opinions. It's opinions.
Well, I mean, but you're an educator. You're involved in higher ed. Of course you're of the right person. I mean, you are on the front lines of this thing, right? I mean, hopefully we're going to have some guests on that can kind of illuminate this a little bit more for us, give us kind of a perspective from people who kind of study higher ed and kind of what this might look like. But I think our time's almost up. I just wanted to thank our listeners for joining us for this introduction to An Incomplete History. Be sure to join us every week for new episodes. You can subscribe through iTunes or wherever you manage to locate this podcast, as well as through our own website. The website is unincompletehistory.com. Everybody can post comments or questions on the website. If your question is something you'd like answered and it's relevant to an episode we do in the future, we'll definitely address that. We'll try to do our best to do that. Once again, I'm Jeff.
And I'm Hillary.
And we'd like to wish you well. Until next time.
Thanks for joining.